This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Nathaniel Philbrick. His new book, Travels with George, In Search of Washington and His Legacy, a reenactment of the inauguration. Nathaniel attends it in New York one April afternoon, and there are revelations here. For example, Genesis 49 to 50, after Washington said, fetch me a Bible. What's there, Nat?
Yes, there is, you know, the 12 tribes of Israel. You know, this is America as a biblical imperative. And, you know, here is George Washington saying, wait a minute, I need a Bible to be sworn in. They find the Bible and it's turned to this passage. This is America of biblical proportions. And, you know, yet Washington is so overcome at the moment of his inauguration. He's up on the second floor balcony with crowds all surrounding the building, with people on the roofs of the buildings across the road. And he looks out and he's dressed not in his military uniform, but in a drab brown suit. He's making the point that, you know, this, he is not a military leader by any means. He is, you know, one of the people, but he's about to be sworn in when it's clear the scene overcomes him and he collapses into a chair, an unscripted move, and the crowd grows hushed. For me, this is the moment. This is the moment where we see Washington on the cusp of becoming the first president and just being completely overcome by the moment. And, you know, I think there's a tendency to think of Washington as that marble man, as the guy who stares at you from the $1 bill, who knew where he was going all along and bent the country to his will. But in reality, he didn't know where the country was going. It was as wild a ride as he could imagine. And he was scared to death as he prepared to take the oath of office.
Overcome that theme. Now, Washington has bad health moments, but I want to connect the author, Nathaniel Philbrick, to the painter, N.C. Wyeth, because both of you were overcome in different moments. It's almost as if you're receding into time here, Nathaniel. And I worried about you when you fell down at Penn Station.
And my wife as well.
Yes, but that moment you recover, thankfully, with health care. However, N.C. Wyeth, it also happened to him. He almost died. How so?
Yes, well, N.C. Wyeth, you know, the great illustrator and painter, was creating a mural that would be up top of a bank in Trenton, New Jersey, depicting Washington coming into Trenton and being greeted by the women of Trenton on his way to New York for his inauguration.
This is 1930. He's painting the mural. Go ahead.
That's right. 1930. You know, he's you know, just a little ways from his home in Chads Ford, Pennsylvania. And he's up there on the scaffolding, working on the mural when he slips and almost falls 30 feet to what would have been his death. The experience haunts him. He goes to bed that night and dreams. He dreams of George Washington at the Battle of Brandywine, right near where his home is, dreams that Washington is on his white horse, looking down upon him. He is improbably on the scaffolding and watching as Washington gives him a tour of the battle. Wyeth is so moved by this experience, he writes what I think is probably his greatest, he paints what is, I think, his greatest painting, which is, in a dream, I see George Washington, where he is up there on the scaffold. It's abstract. It's very modern. It's so N.C. Wyeth. And he's there. He is with his painting garb, looking at Washington on his horse, with the scene of the battle around him, with his son and his dog beside him. It's just it's surreal. It's wonderful, and it for me it was like, and when I you mentioned I you know I passed out at the Penn Station, and I was dehydrated, it turned out, but and I dreamed after I passed out the second time, something that often apparently happens when you pass out. And I dreamed of being in the chariot, Washington's carriage, flying over New York. And for me, it was a channeling.
Let's get into the carriage. Let's get into the carriage. Washington survives two health incidents. One, a tumor that turned out to be carbuncles. They were boils that had festered. Also, an epidemical cold, it was called, a flu. He survives, and he decides he has to get on the road and meet his people. He subscribes to a carriage that's built for him in Philadelphia, built on the model of John Brown in Providence. And we'll come to that other carriage. And it's a cream-colored carriage. Prescott is horse, the white charger is with him, and a staff. And they're going north to New England to travel the back roads, to stay in inns, to meet the people. At this moment, I felt like Clemens, Mark Twain, the king and the prince and the pauper. I felt like the king wanted to get out and meet the people. Was that in George Washington's mind? That
absolutely, yeah. I mean, Washington was walking a very fine line. He wanted the people to regard him as one of them. You know, he was the leader of a republic. He wasn't a king. He wasn't a dictator. He was an elected president. But he also wanted them to be impressed by the new office he now held. This was, you know, this is extraordinary. Up until this point, there had been the Continental Congress with a very weak national body that really had no effective power. Now, after the Constitution had changed everything, Washington was the president of the United States. So he, as you said, he stayed in taverns to emphasize the fact that he was, you know, of the people, staying in public accommodations. But he also would often pause before entering a town, get out of the carriage, dressed in his military uniform from the Revolution, and get on that great big horse Prescott and ride into town and the crowd would go wild. And so, he was having it cut both ways. He was one of the people, yet he also wanted to impress the people of the new office he now held.
His road north, and that reproduces the pathway. We can see it: Greenwich, Fairfield, Milford, Wallingford, Hartford, Suffield. He's headed to Boston. Nothing but a man. Where does that come from?
It's a traditional story that is told over and over again during his New England tour. There are various versions of it, but one version is a child sees Washington for the first time, all excited to see the immortal Washington, and realizes that he's just a human being and says, "He's only a man." And then another version of the story is a child stares in wonder at Washington, and Washington looks down at the child and says, "Yes, child, I may be the president, I may be George Washington, but I am only a man." And initially I was thinking, well, these are the kinds of oral traditions that are just either too good to be true or you know, reflect the time that they were remembered, which was often the 19th century, told by an old lady or an old woman who had seen George Washington. And yet these tales get repeated in town after town. These never appeared in any newspapers at the time. And I began to think that maybe this is what Washington was saying over and over again, trying to remind people, look, I am only a man. I will do my best. But ultimately, I am, like you, a flawed human being doing the best I can.
Nathaniel Philbrick. The book is Travels with George in Search of Washington and His Legacy. When we come back, Boston. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.